You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, we're in Glassell Park on Eagle Rock Boulevard visiting a pottery studio. And once you walk inside this place, behind a garage door, you see plates and bowls and vases and all kinds of things just strewn around the place as people make things in this People's Pottery Project. It was started a couple of years ago as a place where formerly incarcerated women could learn how to work with ceramics and even earn a living wage. Well, the program was founded by and is run by people who have served time in prison. And co-founders Ilka Perkins and Dominique Perkins and Molly Larkey join us now to talk about this program. Molly, welcome to you. Thank you so much for letting us into this place.
My pleasure.
I want to start and talk about how this first got started. Tell me sort of a personal story of how you got this in the first place.
So I had been volunteering with the anti-carceral movement here in Los Angeles. Organizations like CURB, Californians United for a Responsible Budget, and California Coalition for Women Prisoners. CCWP is one of the only organizations that really is on the ground visiting women and folks inside to find out what the living conditions are and respond to like really urgent needs. The coalition exists between women inside, people coming out, and allies. And I'm an ally. I've never been incarcerated. But I was witnessing people coming out of prison and like doing amazing advocacy for people who are still incarcerated and struggling to find jobs or fill basic needs for housing and that sort of thing. And so I'm an artist. I'm not primarily a ceramicist, but as part of my studio, I had some ceramics equipment, and I had an idea of having a class just to offer some of the people who I was organizing with.
Teach people skills.
Yeah, teach people just for fun, you know. And the very first class, which was in the summer of 2019, five people came, and two of them were homeless at the time. And I immediately said, okay, if people are going to come make ceramics even for fun, they're going to get paid, both to value their time and to also just put some money in their pockets. And so we started off for, I think the first 6 months were just a once a week class. People could drop in, make some ceramics, and get paid to make whatever they wanted to make.
And what do? Just dig into your checking account to do that? I mean, how do you pay people?
Yeah, that's what I did. I paid out of my pocket, and I just said, if people are going to come here, I'm gonna value their labor. Even if we didn't have a business, we didn't have a product, it was just like their time is important, and they need to get paid to be here.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it started taking off, right? Talk about sort of the evolution of it.
Well, we had an idea for a business. You know, we started to see that, like, oh, we could actually build an organization together. And, you know, the first idea was to make a bud vase, which now we are doing. Dominique made a beautiful bud vase while we were, you know, talking to you. But we had the idea for doing a bowl and selling it. And I think at that point, I really had this intuition or really understanding that this could be something that would be really powerful to do a variety of things at once, to provide wages to people, to provide a platform for the advocacy and the anti-carceral organizing that I was doing. And yeah, you know, there's like this conversation about like, what do you mean not prisons? What do you mean not cops or this kind of thing? And it's like, I'm going to show you. Like, I'm literally just going to show you.
Ilka Perkins, let me ask you this question. So how did you get involved with this?
I actually was a lifer in prison. And when you're a lifer in prison, you have to go in front of a parole board to be found suitable. One of the qualifications that they require is that you have a job ready for you when you get released. So, of course, being formerly incarcerated, I've been gone for almost 26 years at the time. There's nobody that's going to hire me because I don't have any skills. So Molly was kind enough. She offered me a job here as a studio assistant, welding for her. And by God's grace, when I went to board, they saw that I had a job offer and I had everything else lined up, and they found me suitable for parole. I was released June 5th of 2019. I had to stay in a transitional home for 6 months, but as soon as I got out of the transitional home, I came and worked for Molly, and one day she was like, well, you guys enjoy this? You know, I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, how would you guys like to be co-founders of People's Pottery Project? And I was like, co-founders? What the hell? What is that? You know, what does that mean? I'm from prison. I don't know what a co-founder is, you know? And why would somebody give us that opportunity when we're formally incarcerated? Because being incarcerated, that's all you're told is what you are, what you're not going to be, that you're just a number. Society deems you as violent. You're never going to fit in. You're going to always come back. So for somebody to believe in us, to actually offer us a position of co-founding a nonprofit, that was something big to us. It was an amazing feeling. And we said, yeah, you know.
So when Molly said, I want you to help co-found, you know, the People's Pottery Project, and you were like, we've never done that before. I don't know what, you know. How did you go about doing it?
So we just kind of like followed suit with whatever Molly would tell us. Like, so we started making bowls and we started outreaching to people who are formerly incarcerated, because we ended up getting an article in Hypoallergenic. And from that article in Hypoallergenic, we started getting an influx of orders. So Dominique and I outreached through ARC, through CCWP, through word of mouth, because we still keep in touch with formerly incarcerated. And we asked them, hey, how would you guys like to get paid and just make pottery? $15 an hour. You can stay for as long as you want.
So Lack McCausland says they want to carry us.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen every day, right?
Like, it was incredible. It was this article came out about us. We had not been around for that long. And I mean, I the others can say, I think we all felt immensely just boosted by that. We were like, wow. None of us had ever run a ceramics business, nor a nonprofit, but we were like, we just, you know, there was just a lot of feeling that we could do something and that it could be really powerful if we just kind of stuck with it.
Well, let's take a look at the wheel itself. And Dominique Perkins, this is Ilka, this is your wife, right? You two are married, which is very cool. And you're going to show us how to, what do you call it, pot?
How to throw.
Now, why is it throw?
Because you throw the piece of clay onto the wheel.
And that's what you're going to do right now. So for anybody who's never done this before, or maybe has only seen like the movie Ghost, so this is what you're about to do, right? You're going to wet that clay, and it's going to spin into what you want it to be.
Yeah, but sometimes you never always get what you really want. You just go with the flow. I'm formerly incarcerated, you know. I served 13 years of my life, but it didn't define me. I mean, look at me now. I'm here with great people, and it just feels good. I feel safe in my environment, you know, it's healthy.
How did you get here in the first place?
So I got here through the grace of God, for one, and Elka introduced me to Molly Larkey, and that's how I got here. So Ilka said, do you want to go make some pottery with Molly Larkey at her pottery studio, because she's my boss or whatever. I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. And I came over here. Molly said, you guys want to make some money making bowls or whatnot? And I was like, sure, why not? And I enjoyed it.
Molly Larkey, you said you're in the anti-carceral. You're in the movement. What is it about the criminal justice system that you think people get wrong?
You know, I think that people feel there's an idea that's perpetuated that prisons keep people safe, and they don't work to keep people safe. Like, they perpetuate crime and harm because they're so unsafe themselves. And I also would just say that, like, also the idea of that people inside are bad and different, and that like they need to be separated or pay some debt, is just foundationally incorrect. And I think that's another part of why this organization is so important, because most people who haven't encountered the incarceral system doesn't get to see or interact with formerly incarcerated people. And so like this is a platform for people to actually come to know us and our community, and really see that we're the same, you know, and like it's not like they are so different and need to be kept away. What people need is our jobs and love and connection and care. And, you know, we're not providing a whole lot of that in our society right now. And, you know, as an artist, art is very important as part of that what we can provide for people to actually, like, be healthy humans, you know?
Molly Larkey, Ilka, and Dominique Perkins. Thank you all for showing us and introducing us to this studio. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We're happy to have you guys.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
It's a beautiful vase you made, Dominique.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and on to Hollywood now, where one studio is hoping to serve as launchpad for content creators to go from influencing to acting. That studio is Brat TV. Here's how it works. They pluck TikTok stars from the internet, they bring them to Tinseltown, put them in web series, and then they send them on their way to a big streaming service like, say, Netflix.
Okay, Harm. Spill the tea.
You can't leave us hanging like this.
Let me guess, it's
boy related.
Ooh la la.
Guys, cut it out. It's serious.
Ooh, like how serious? More than friend serious or?
Don't tell me you kissed someone.
I knew it. It's Walker, isn't it?
OMG, you totally kissed Walker.
OMG. That is a clip from Brat TV's most popular YouTube series, Chicken Girls, a show about the trials and tribulations of middle schoolers. Oh, don't you remember those days? Just one of many YouTube shows and podcasts from the Brat TV studio. And Rebecca Jennings is senior correspondent at The Goods by Vox, where she covers everything from influencers to the creator economy. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right. So set the scene, pardon the cliche, set the scene a little bit, would you? I mean, what is Brat TV? Is this like an incubator? And who do the folks there work with?
Yeah, so Brat TV is essentially a standard production studio. Their shows that they make, they cast people that have usually kind of like made a footprint on an app, normally TikTok, but it actually it was founded in 2017 before TikTok came to the US. And so in the beginning, they were plucking stars out of Musical.ly, which is later became TikTok. And in the past couple of years, they've been leaning on TikTok celebrities to be like the main characters of their shows. So essentially, it's a production studio. It's located just right across from CBS's Television City. And they film, you know, pretty inexpensive to produce TV shows that air on YouTube. And they're starring like celebrities that kids, often like pre-teenage girls, already follow online.
So are we talking a very young audience? I mentioned middle schoolers and this the Chicken Girls series. Is that pretty much what you get with Brat TV?
Yeah, we're talking about middle schoolers, adolescents, preteens, and then recently they tried to expand into the older teens, the early 20s, with a spinoff YouTube channel called Past Your Bedtime. And they do more like spicier podcasts with a little bit of older talent from TikTok.
Is this all about, Rebecca, you know, I want to be famous, right? I have a platform. I'm, you know, I'm on TikTok and I'm trying to gain enough followers so people will know who I am. I mean, what's in it for the TikTok star influencer? Do they gain even more fame from this?
I think for them, it's sort of like a waypoint into the traditional entertainment industry. Like, not every influencer necessarily wants to do that or wants to be an actor or a singer or some kind of other more like traditional type of celebrity. But for the ones that do, it's really hard from going in your bedroom in, you know, Ohio, getting a couple million followers and then being like, okay, what do I do next? I think for them, something like Brat, which is like, you know, you can have a chance at talking to entertainment industry people without having, you know, all this pressure of, you know, starring in a Netflix series or something. It's much less low pressure than that. And so I think that's really attractive for a lot of the people. It's also a low commitment. I think a lot of the times Brat TV hires people for, you know, a couple of episodes, maybe like a role that's like smaller and only in one in one show versus, you know, signing on for a whole season of something and like packing up and moving to LA full time.
It sounds like, Rebecca, there are a couple of things going on. Number one, you're going from your, as you mentioned, your bedroom or your den in Ohio to this studio, right? Lights, camera, action. But also it's sort of would be like a stepping stone, right? For people who, hey, I really want to get into the entertainment business. I do have this platform. I did grow it this way. What else can I do? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, totally. I think for a lot of people who get famous just by filming themselves, it can be really intimidating to step into like a studio setup or something like that. Working with other people, having to be on camera while other people are watching is a completely different skill than filming yourself in your bedroom when you're feeling like you're most comfortable. So I think like this offers them, you know, a low commitment way to get their foot in the door in LA, see if that's something that they want to pursue further, and yeah, get a feel for what it's like.
And how do these TikTokers, these, you know, social media stars, how do they transition to acting? Does a studio help them with acting classes? I mean, is there formal training? How does that work?
I mean, I think, you know, they all audition. So I think with something like a Brat TV show where, you know, it's going on YouTube, there's like, you know, it's a full set. I think the level of acting required isn't, you know, the highest.
OMG. Right.
Right. It's like, you know, if you're a compelling star on your own and you can, you know how to say a few lines, you know, it's, you're not going to win an Oscar, but you know, you can, this is like your first step at trying. I remember Hilary Duff talking about like the first couple episodes of Lizzie McGuire when she was, you know, 10 or 11 or something. And she was like, oh yeah, we could not act. And I think like that's similar to what's happening here. Like, you know, they're not professional actors yet, but they're kind of dipping their toe into the space and seeing what happens.
We talk about, you know, what it is that these folks, these influencers want to do and sort of the, you know, to get from one point to the next to the next. What does Brat TV want to do? Who are they wanting to either emulate or do they see success in something else?
Yeah, I think really what they want to be is sort of like what the WB used to be for like teenagers. You know, I think they see this market gap in between. Okay, there's Netflix and they've got a couple of teen shows there, but, you know, not that many. But beyond, you know, like the major streaming services or, you know, specific influencers, there's not really, you know, like a professionally produced kind of like lots of entertainment for this specific age group. So, you know, the way that when I was growing up, I identified with like, oh, I love like the WB and like, you know, whatever, like the OC or like those kind of shows that were like clearly for teens. You know, I think they want to be like a brand name for kids and teens that is not just like, okay, going to the teen section on Netflix.
Is Hollywood paying attention to this, do you think?
I think they are, but I think like, you know, I think there's a kind of divide still between, you know, Hollywood that when I talked to the CEO of Brat, he was like, you know, Hollywood still likes to think of itself as like the thing that is going to, you know, make the movies that win Oscars and the TV shows that win Emmys, and you need us in order to do that. And the idea that, you know, a bunch of influencers can come in and just kind of go like just power through that is kind of threatening. But I also don't think that's a real like huge fear either way, because no one really thinks that like influencers are going to win Oscars. But, you know, who knows? Give it 5 years.
True. Rebecca Jennings, senior correspondent at The Goods by Vox. Rebecca, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. The artist Deborah Roberts explores a subject that's come under increased scrutiny in recent years: beauty and race. Using mixed media collages, she critiques society's notions of beauty and how those notions can affect Black people, especially Black youth. The collages feature young kids, often surrounded by lots and lots of empty white space. She has an exhibition in LA right now that runs through August, and Lindsay Preston Zappas is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. She's with us right now. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
That was a brief description of what Deborah Roberts' collages look like. Can you tell us more? I mean, besides the, you know, the white backdrop and pretty stark images.
Yeah, so she, as you mentioned, she uses children, specifically Black children, as her subjects. And she uses this really interesting mix of collage and painting. So she's mixing in photography, but also painting parts of their figure as well. So to render their faces, she sources images of children online and she prints them out. You know, they all have different resolution and different scales. And then she sort of cuts them up and reassembles them. So the children have these kind of fractured hybrid faces that are collaged from different children, again, she finds online, also Black actors. One of them has a hand that's Barack Obama's hand. So there's politicians and kind of notable figures in there as well. But then the photographs seamlessly blend with these kind of painted sections that she does of their limbs and hands or clothing. And as you mentioned, they're often depicted against a white background. So really your focus just goes onto this child and the emotion that she captured in their face and their postures.
Why do you think she focuses on children? You mentioned actors and you mentioned, you know, politicians, but a lot of these are children. I mean, ideas about beauty don't stop, I guess, as you grow up.
Well, you know, I think that children, it's a really deliberate strategy that she uses to get at these much larger issues of systemic racism in our country specifically. And the work is really about how we perceive Black children. And, you know, we often adultify Black girls and boys. And, you know, I think Roberts does this amazing job of capturing her children that she depicts at this perfect age where they're kind of teetering on this kind of innocence and tenderness, but about to kind of turn into adulthood. You know, some of them, you see them trying to puff up their chests or kind of act strong, and then others just look so vulnerable, and you really connect with that kind of emotional vulnerability. And, you know, some of the pieces, the kids are literally just standing there. It's like as if they've been playing and we sort of interrupted them as a viewer and they're sort of just looking up at us. And in talking about her work, Roberts references a lot of instances where kids are in confrontations with police and they're treated with violence and hostility when literally they are just standing there or just playing on a corner. And so I think her work really speaks to that.
There's one work, Lindsay, called Cock-a-doodle-doo, where we see this young man, he's sort of posing with strong arms, right? And his shirt, you mentioned the puffing, right? The puffing up the chest. So he's got the, you know, he's posing with these strong arms. His shirt has a rooster on it. Tell us about that piece.
This is an example where Roberts gets really into using symbolism in the work and an example of how she kind of is coding different symbols throughout her paintings. So in this piece, you know, it's one of those works where she gives the child this really strong pose and he's kind of pumping his chest with these strong arms. But it's obviously still a child. You can see he has these kind of scrawny arms and legs. So there's this kind of posturing that he's doing. And here, you know, she specifically uses this rooster on some of the works. She kind of puts graphic images on the T-shirts in meaningful ways. And here the rooster is really meant to reference that as well, this kind of macho posturing and kind of pumping up the chest. And for this work, the artist was really thinking about Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy who was killed by police in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's obviously a memorable case. Mm. What other works stood out to you, Lindsay, in this show?
So, yeah, aside from these figurative work, there's a whole room in the gallery that's given to these text-based works where Roberts is using Black female names. And she really plays with that. You know when you type something into Microsoft Word and you get that kind of red squiggle underneath a word that's misspelled, right?
That's not a word.
Yeah. But she plays with that underline in this really smart way where she's underlining Black female names with that red squiggle. And
wow.
So, again, she's really speaking to the ways that our systems are biased, even down to the technology we use, even to this kind of daily messaging we are receiving from something that we think of as fairly innocuous, like Microsoft Word, right? But Roberts is also talking here about how naming a child is kind of the first act of freedom. And it's like this way of honoring lineage and ancestry, but then so quickly gets reinforced as something, you know, that others might judge you on or that even Microsoft Word is telling you is incorrect. You know, and some of the names that she's pulling for these works are actually names of Black women and girls who have gone missing and their stories haven't made national news or really prompted these large media investigations.
So these textworks really provide this powerful context to the figurative collages, and I think they all really work together to speak about how systemic racism starts at childhood and really shows us the beauty and individuality of these children that she's representing.
Where can you see this work, by the way, here in L.A.?
Yeah, so this is a collaboration between two institutions. Most of the exhibition is on view at Art in Practice, which is in Leimert Park. But there's also a large-scale mural at CAM, which is the California African American Museum. And this show, really interestingly, marks a five-year collaboration between these two institutions, where CAM is going to be curating exhibitions at Art in Practice over the next 5 years. So again, the main show's up at Art in Practice, and that's on view through August 20th.
The artist is Deborah Roberts. Lindsay Preston Zapp is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, we're done with this episode of Greater LA, but you can hear us anytime online at kcrw.com/GLA or grab the podcast. Never miss an episode wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at the website, share your thoughts with us. Even give us some story ideas. What's a great LA story we should be talking about? Let us know at kcrw.com/GLA. Join us next week when we take you to Olvera Street for some Mexican history. What kind of relief will you get for California's high gas prices? And could the cannabis market collapse because of high taxes and regulations here in the Golden State? That's all yours next week. Jenna Cagle, Andrea Bautista, Nihar Patel, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's show happen. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your ears tonight. Have a great night.